Brendan Newton has contributed to the commentary.ca, and we hope he will continue to do so in the future. Brendan is a student at the University of British Columbia, majoring in English Literature and History. I've known him for years, and he's a compulsive reader, and could easily be described as a bon vivant and a raconteur. Welcome once again to the commentary.ca, Brendan Newton. Good afternoon, Brendan.
Good afternoon. Bon vivant, a raconteur. Okay, I guess I'll go with that.
Just say yes.
You got to take whatever you get, right?
Just say yes, right? At least I don't tell you to manger le merdre or something like that.
Oui.
Yeah. So, how are you?
I'm good. A little tired. It's funny. You get back into the swing of things in September at the university, and I find I get very tired the first week because I think it's so much new stuff thrown at you, so much stuff you have to plan out over the next few months, and also just the getting up earlier, because I'm not, by my nature, someone who likes to get up in the morning, early morning, and that's when some of my classes are, so it's a bit of an adjustment my body has to make. And also, university is just so crowded the first few days, it takes some time. You've sort of forgotten exactly how crowded is, so that takes some getting used to. But overall, I think I'm doing okay, and I'm looking forward to this year. Probably going to be my last at UBC, at least in terms of the BA, assuming all goes well with my classes, of course.
You always wanted to major in English literature, or is that something you just picked up when you started your post-secondary?
I think as I got further on through high school, it kind of became more clear to me that was where I was having my largest success in terms of grades, and also that was what I was enjoying. I mean, I've always really liked to read, so it's like basically, you know, it's the study of reading, and it's essentially classes where most of the work comes from reading. So, and especially I've always liked fiction and poetry over the last few years, so that's what you do in the English literature, so it kind of was a natural fit for me.
Do you have time, though, to read stuff outside of school? Like, I mean, do you read stuff, the books that are out now, like fiction or nonfiction or otherwise?
You know, I know a lot of people really complain that they don't have enough time for that, but I don't know. I do try to make time to kind of read some stuff. I'm just reading for the sake of reading it. There's no it's not for any class or anything. I think it occurred to me at one point that here I was grousing about the fact that I didn't have any time to read because of school, whereas I was watching 3 hours of TV or so per day. I said, no, if I can take the time for TV, you know, I think
use that time to read instead.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I guess, well, I don't exercise, but I mean, if everyone must, I suppose, and so everyone must read, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you have to read whatever it is that really grabs you, whatever you like, and I mean, there's probably people who have more of a natural predilection to exercise. Likewise, people have this, there are those who have more of a predilection to reading.
What are you reading now?
Actually, at the moment, I'm reading some stuff by J.D. Salinger of Catcher in the Rye fame for one of my classes. I'm not a huge fan of his, but he is an interesting character, and I think he does write very, his fiction is usually very detailed. My only objection is that it seems that his one great creation is Holden Caulfield from Catcher in the Rye, and almost every other character is a little bit like him. I'm reading a couple of books by Stephen King in my own time. I know I sometimes when I tell people that I'm an English literature major, but I love Stephen King. It's a little like I'm studying to be a gourmet chef, and I admit to liking tomato ketchup, you know.
Right. Yeah, you can't discriminate against Stephen King. I mean, I was reading... I never read fiction in general.
Right.
But I... he had a book out called... I think it's called A Life in Writing or something like
on
that.
On Writing, yes.
On Writing.
That's
have you read
great
that?
Book. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I was about halfway through it, and I really enjoyed it, even though I have no idea, you know, how to plot point or a point a plot, you know.
Yeah.
Plot a story or anything like that. I just, you know, enjoyed the idea that writing, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, is generally the same sort of exercise that one does. Television, you mentioned that you don't watch 3 hours of television anymore. Do you watch any at all, or?
I have this sort of idea of the 10% of television that isn't crap. I guess television is one area where I tend to be a bit almost elitist. Like, I generally try to avoid the reality TV.
You won't be watching The Apprentice tonight, or?
No. I might watch Jeopardy because I've heard that possibly Ken might lose. Ken Jennings, guy who's won, 41 straight games on Jeopardy, and, you know, to me that's kind of someone who I would aspire to be, I guess, because I'm very good at trivia myself.
Useless knowledge.
Yeah, useless knowledge, exactly.
But you don't watch, so what's the 10% of television that you do watch is
well,
what?
PBS? A little, yeah, although, I don't know, I mean, sometimes the stuff is just, you know, funny. Like I'm a bit of a Simpsons addict. I mean, I've seen most of the episodes quite a few times, but I mean, it's still fun to, you know, just check into the Simpsons or Family Guy. You know, some of those the adult cartoons. I don't know. I'm kind of a bit of an addiction towards them.
What's that Siegfried and Roy one? Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I haven't watched that one yet. Father of the Pride.
They say that that's an adult one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Even though it involves, like, talking animals, which are usually more a staple of the Disney-type stuff. But, no, I intend to check that out sometimes. It sounds vaguely intriguing, and, you know, humor about Siegfried and Roy. I don't know if that's ever going to get old.
Right. I had a guy on earlier today. He was talking about the film festival.
Oh, yeah.
Are you planning to go see any of those movies?
I might. I haven't planned out anything.
Do you go to the film festival at all? Have you been in the past?
I've been before. A few years ago, a really good friend of mine and I went to see... Well, it was more her idea. A film by a Japanese fellow, and it was very it was different from anything that you see at, you know, your local Cineplex or whatever, but it was definitely an interesting movie.
It wasn't Hilary Duff or anything like that?
No, far removed from Hilary Duff, yeah.
So, and he was talking about some of the films that'll open, and I was quite interested with the idea of what film festivals are, because I've never been to a film festival. And so, you know, what goes... He was talking about 300 movies in the 2 weeks, or the less than 2 weeks of the film festival we
are. Oh, yeah, it's...
And so I was thinking, how do you pare down? How do you get to 300 films? You must have looked at 1,500 films to get to 300. But I guess film buffs revel in that. And so that'll be on the 28th. But you're involved with the Fringe Festival, right?
Yeah.
Explain to people, lay people that don't know much about the Fringe Festival, what that is and what they can expect should they go. First of all, let's give the date, September 9th and the 19th.
9th
that's today,
the 19th.
Right?
Yeah, that's right. And it, what you can expect is it's I guess Fringe Theater refers to the atypical, usually the experimental kind of stuff as well. It's on the fringes.
It ain't Porgy and Bess or...
No, exactly. Although, actually, I have a very good friend who is doing some of the publicity for a musical, although it's called New York City Hospital, the musical. But it's sort of a...
sounds funny.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's not a nicey-nice musical, you know. It involves seductive surgeons and a bedpan ballet sequence, apparently. I think I'll have to go see that one just for the...
So these are sort of, I guess, these are unconventional sort of...
Exactly, that's a good word, is unconventional, I think.
See, I've been to the theater, but I usually go see musicals or plays or stuff. I never, you know, I've never... for someone like me, and you know me pretty well,
mm-hmm.
Would some of the stuff that the Fringe Festival's putting on, would that appeal to me in any way, or should I just stay away completely?
Oh, I don't know. There's such a wide variance of shows and performers that I think there's probably going to be something that anyone would like. I mean, you kind of have to be open-minded, and you have to be, I don't know, you just have to be attentive to it, and maybe a bit willing to take risks, because you sometimes get surprised by certain shows. They're not quite what you're expecting, or they go somewhere. They kind of take a real left turn at some point, or what have you. But no, really, I think there's something for anyone who is at all appreciative of theater. I think I would have to say.
No, I'm ignorant. I'm close-minded, and I'm judgmental. So
yeah.
Leave me alone. No, but I'm kidding. I was looking at the guide here. Someone left this at the house. I don't know. Was it you who did that, or
no?
There's a the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, How I Learned to Drive.
And, yeah, I have heard of that one. I don't know too much about it.
That's probably something that I would actually go to.
Sure.
And how many people actually go to this? I mean, is there a lot of people that...
You know, I don't have a quote on it, but...
But when you go, do you see a lot of folks out, or...?
Oh, yeah. It's a big event, and, I mean, there... It depends on the show, right? Like, the word of mouth is incredible. Like, last year there was a show called... it was the one-man Star Wars trilogy. You may have heard of it.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. And the guy who did it is back this year doing the one-man Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh.
So, and I mean, there must have been, probably, I would say, maybe not hundreds of people, but a lot of people who were looking to get tickets to that show. A lot of them were turned away because it was so, it became just such an attraction, you know.
I'm looking at some of the names. New York Hospital, the musical.
Yeah.
No Theory Will Save Us.
Oh, yeah.
The Erotic Memoirs of St. Gilles. The Year of the Panda. Toxic Saliva. 10 Ways to Abuse an Old Woman. Swimming Lessons with Paisley Kite. These are awfully eclectic names.
Oh, I know. Shows. Yeah.
Does this monologue make me look fat? A Dog Called Bitch. My Brother Sang Like Roy Orbison.
Yeah, well, that's one thing where I think the Fringe Festivals have
better titles.
They have almost anyone else beat in terms of the titles. I mean,
now what kind of people go to these things? I mean, like a demographic? Are these young people? Are these old people? Are they incomed? Or
they're usually fairly young. I think it's more a certain type of person, like, not really in terms of age, but in terms of, you know, what they're going to be interested in. Like, they're usually fairly intelligent people, usually people who enjoy going to the theater, who enjoy,
And who aren't willing to pay exorbitant prices.
Yeah, yeah, so it's...
The prices, though. I mean, what do you expect to pay to go see A Dog Called Bitch? I mean, how much of that run you, roughly?
You know, I believe it's, I don't have a handy reference here, but it's probably...
I'll make up a price.
Sorry?
Make up a price.
I believe it's around $8.
Really? Well, that's quite reasonable, I guess. And you get... Now, for you, $8, you get your money's worth? You get a good time, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think that, like, that's, nowadays, that's probably about the price of a movie. Probably actually a little less than the price of a movie now, but I mean, personally speaking, I would call a fringe show probably as good a time as most movies, from my perspective at least. I mean, it depends on what you fancy, right?
Hilary Duff.
Yeah, exactly.
Vancouver...
No, we should stop picking on Hilary Duff.
We should. She's a sweet girl, and I'm sure she's harmless. VancouverFringe.com is the website if
it
you're
is,
interested
yep.
in looking at that. And, of course, the festival box office, they're the ones who are selling the tickets, right?
Yeah.
It's in a Ticketmaster deal, right?
No.
Politics, you pay attention to the political goings-on in this part of the world?
I do a little, yeah. I mean...
What do you think of Kerry and Bush? What do you think of that race?
Kerry and Bush. Well, you know, I was actually listening to your interview with Michael Kwan earlier, and I think I'm kind of in his camp. I really don't know a lot about John Kerry. That joke you made about ketchup, it took me a second. His wife, you know. And, I mean... Yeah, I don't really know enough about him. A bit of a flip-flopper, I've heard.
Were you for the war or against the war?
I was pretty against the war. I mean, and it could be part of that was that at the time I was, I had a position actually at the Langara College Student Union, which was very, it is, well, still is very, most of the people who are active there are very anti-war, anti-Bush, anti-globalization.
Right.
You know, the whole nine yards. So I was just around a lot of anti-war types, and I really didn't... The pro-war arguments that I heard, they didn't really convince me that there was necessarily
there was a need to get
the justification, yeah. And I especially dislike the way that it felt like the Bush administration really makes it look... They just the excessiveness of the propaganda where Saddam Hussein and all those guys are evil and, you know, we're not doing this for any self-interested reason. It just struck me as so dishonest.
Right.
I'm just sort of... And I mean, I know that, you know... There was politics is dishonest, and partly that kind of makes me a bit resistant to politics, I think.
We're speaking with Brendan Newton. He's a contributing writer at thecommentary.ca. The thing about Bush and Kerry, I mean, I've always liked George W. Bush, and I know.
You seem, it's funny though, that you don't seem to have surrounded yourself in terms of the commentary with other people of that persuasion.
That's true. I'm the only one that really, you know.
Yep.
But the thing about Kerry and Bush is it doesn't really matter who the American president is. I think you'll still hear the same rhetoric. You'll still hear the same sort of the world will still loathe Americans even if John Kerry were president.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
But I think that in terms of picking a president, I don't think the American people are looking at the war as one of the central issues. I mean, granted, the war in Iraq has been, as the president put it quite eloquently last week, a catastrophic success.
Huh.
I don't think that weighs heavily when people go to the polls on November 2nd. I think the price of gas, I think jobs, and sort of the economic situation in the United States will, you know, these everyday issues will be prevalent rather than sort of global issues like the war in Iraq.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at this point, you know, I was talking with someone the other day about why Kerry doesn't seem to resonate with the American people, and that's because he seems an elitist. He's a northern liberal from Boston
mm-hmm.
whose wife is a billionaire, or a multimillionaire at least, and they don't seem like the kind of people, despite John Edwards and his wife, who would go to Wendy's on a regular basis. I mean, Senator Edwards and his wife go to Wendy's. place for their anniversary. Other than that, they'd be eating snails and foie gras on the campaign bus. Whereas George W. Bush seems to relate to the general populace, I think, much more and much more easier than perhaps Senator Kerry would. And I think that's, at the end of the day, people will vote for the guy that they're comfortable with. And, you know, Bush's constituency are those NASCAR moms and dads. You know, these are the same people that go to church on Sunday morning and then go watch a car race in the afternoon. And, you know, these are Christians, these are people with family values, and I think they'd be much more inclined to vote for President Bush rather than a senator who is a flip-flopper, who mm-hmm. has positions that are nuanced.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. I think, to some extent, I often find myself questioning how much of Bush's image that seeks to make him the comfortable choice is how legitimate that is. I mean, you can say that Kerry's wife is a multimillionaire.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, look at the money that he comes from.
The Bush family, you know, Yale and Vice former President Bush, Bush 41. You know, this is. I would think that the Bush family is an actual dynasty. However, I think that it's about images, and I think it's about, it is politics, and so, you know, the facts really sort of cloud one's judgment, I suppose, and don't play a part. Do you think who do you think will win?
I really don't know. I mean, I think it'll be, I haven't been paying enough attention.
Our colleague, Mr. Coram, said that he thought it'd be 10 points for Bush.
Oh, okay.
At the time, I thought he was probably half right. At this point, I think it does look like 10 points for Bush. But then again, we got 60 days or so until the actual vote,
the
actual poll that matters, right?
Yeah.
Are you generally optimistic or are you pessimistic about the state of the world?
I don't know. I mean, I really have this desire for optimism, like, that I think there's also, it's sort of a guarded, I think maybe guarded optimism would be a good way to put it.
A cautious optimism.
Hmm?
A cautious optimism.
Yeah, cautious optimism, uh-huh, a sort of an adult optimism, like, where you're really aware of the realities that you're still hoping, like, I mean, just, you know, because I think that, like, I'm not a big fan of sort of simplistic thinking, which is, I think, what you get when you either get too, like, pessimistic, like, sort of just depressed nihilism, or versus the Pollyanna school of thought, where you're just sort of, you know, everything's beautiful, everything's good, everything's going to get better, it's, you know, we're moving more and more towards everything good. I think both of those are just, they're not realistic, they're pretty simple.
Brendan, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem.
And we look forward to more writing from you. I know that you have a book review.
Yep.
And we'll look forward to seeing that.
I'm thinking also that, speaking about Stephen King, it's the final segment of this sort of series that he's been working on off and on really his whole career, the Dark Tower series. So I might write a recap of that once the final book's out.
When is that? You know, the publishers are talking about that.
The final book is comes out September 21st.
Really?
Yep.
So that's something to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah.
That'll knock the Da Vinci Code, hopefully.
Well, actually, I know earlier this summer the sixth part of the Dark Tower, Song of Susanna, it's called, knocked the Da Vinci Code off but I believe the Da Vinci Code has since
rebounded,
regained the title. Yeah.
Really.
I have yet to read that book, but I probably will eventually, just to see what the fuss is about, you know.
Uh-huh. So we'll look forward to seeing your pieces on the site.
Great. Okay.
And I know I speak personally now, and I appreciate the sort of diversity that you've brought to it.
No problem.
It's a hell of a team that we've got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brendan, we look forward to
you.
Your next contribution to the commentary.ca, and best of luck with all your endeavors. Yep. The segment was produced by yours truly with Richie Leung. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plena.